And it is the Peace Officer Show today. We've got Jason Marlowe from the Iowa State Patrol joining us across the console. We also have Major Jeff Klein from the Burlington Police Department. We have the Sheriff of Des Moines County. He's Mike Johnstone. We have the Chief of the Burlington Police Department, Dennis Kramer, joining us as well today. And we're talking about law enforcement. We're talking about any of the things affecting law enforcement. And I think one of the questions I have is, we're just talking about this virus that is out there, and I don't know, does law enforcement get involved? Is there any impact on law enforcement, or is there any specific things that that law enforcement, I guess, has to be aware of? Let's go to Dennis Kramer. Dennis, I'm not sure if a virus situation like this, does that affect law enforcement at all, or it certainly affects public safety, doesn't it?
Well, it does. We just need to be aware of it and cognizant of it, and I know that emergency management is putting out some information, and they keep us updated on what's going on locally, and just providing us with precautionary things that we can do, because we do have contact with a lot of people in law enforcement, as do emergency responders. So that's more so how to be aware of it, how to protect ourselves, how to protect others, and
obviously there's no threat here as of yet, and I guess we deal with that as times go by. Mike, what about you? Anything from the Sheriff's Department on that?
We're working with Gina and the health department also on some procedures and policies and kind of reviewing things and as to what we're where we're at now and where we need to be. And, you know, basically what we've been hearing is it boils down to just being careful, you know, washing your hands and doing the right things like you normally would. And you know, what we need to remind ourselves of about this, and it's, I believe this thing is getting totally out of control. I don't know why, if it's the media or whatever, but and you consider that probably over 300,000 people every year die of the common flu in this,
yeah.
You know. So it's like, I don't know if that's worldwide, but it's like, are you kidding? You know, we're making such a big deal over this now. Should this be important? Absolutely. I mean, I think it's something we need to keep an eye on, but let's not make a big panic about it. And I think we need to just readdress what we do every day, including washing our hands and coming in contact with people who are sick. And if you are sick, you stay home. And, you know, our guys, we assist EMS and fire on a lot of things like that. And, again, we've kind of readdressed that with everybody. It's like, be careful. And we have the supplies on hand. And we're going to restock our patrol cars. And we're, you know, at the jail also and those kind of things.
Hand sanitizers and obviously washing your hands. Obviously, common sense is – and staying healthy. That's probably the number one. You have a strong immune system. That's really a key here. From a state patrol standpoint, Jason Marlowe, does a patrol get involved in anything? I guess in terms of dealing with something like this, or
again,
not?
I think I'd echo the sentiments of the chief and the sheriff there as it relates to, you know, those experts in that field are the ones that we should probably listen to a little bit more. I was messing around on a social media site the other day, and they had a press conference, and I think it was maybe in England or France, and they were talking to a soccer coach, and somebody asked him what their concerns were, you know, involving soccer and the coronavirus. He said, listen, I'm a soccer coach. This is my job. You should listen to those that know a lot more about it than me. And instead of taking all of these outside influences and what they're saying, listen to the experts. You know, I could teach you how to win a soccer match or make you a better player. And I think sometimes that goes hand in hand getting blown out.
A lot of misinformation's out there. I do know that the sale of Corona beer went down 10% last week. The only thing to fear is fear itself. And obviously, if you've got money in the market, and probably most everybody does, it's been a wild ride. And again, we realize just how many things are made in China. I mean, it's astonishing how many things are. But from a standpoint of law enforcement right now, it's sort of sit and wait and be prepared is probably the only thing you can say. Is that right, Mike?
I don't know what else you can do. I mean, I think you know you're aware of the problem and you prepare for the problem, and then you wait for the problem to appear. Whether or not it will be a big problem or not, you know, we don't know. I mean, it could become a pandemic. I highly doubt that. Of course, I'm not an expert, and I can't even begin to talk about that. But, it's like, let's put it in perspective, let's deal with it, and let's be prepared. And like anything else, I mean, you try, and, you know, I've had the flu this year. You know, I've tried to maintain my health and be careful and everything, but sometimes those things just happen. And a lot
if you're
of
with the public, you're right, going to have that. You're going to have that kind of situation.
Exactly.
Happen.
And if you have a weak immune system, or, you know, it's probably best that you, you know, think about staying away from large crowds of people or traveling and being on planes and things like that. I think that's probably smart.
All right. Let's talk about the other thing that's out there, is that is recreational marijuana. It's booming in Illinois. Medical marijuana is, they're looking at changing medical marijuana in Iowa. At least they're talking about it, right, I think, Colin? I'm not
They've
exactly.
They've been pushing forward bills to both change the levels of potency in medical marijuana-based
medication.
And
also the number of conditions.
And also the number of conditions. And to put in perspective, Illinois' second month sales totals for, and this is counting non-taxed marijuana, their total sales were over $34 million.
Okay, so obviously, okay, so tax revenue possibly, but I guess it, the question I have is there any indication of any people from Iowa heading out over there and doing some shopping and coming on back, or I don't know if that's has that made any impact at all?
Yeah, I've heard that there are some that go over there and buy, but they need to understand, and this is the point that law enforcement needs to make, is that it's still illegal in the state of Iowa. So if you bring it across the river, you're in possession of it, and you could be charged with it if you're found to be with it. So, you know, until we move to that point, you know, you best keep it across over in Illinois.
Is marijuana a problem in Iowa? Is it a problem? Is it a problem drug in Iowa in terms of we hear a lot about meth. We hear about all sorts of other things that are problematic. Probably alcohol is probably the biggest problem drug we have, isn't it? I guess if we looked at what causes the number of accidents and things like that.
Yeah, you could break that down from maybe even a nicotine standpoint and what that does to people as far as their overall health. And, you know, when you look at the term problem, I think you have to take that into perspective,
right,
is the availability of marijuana in just about every corner of the state of Iowa. I think we'd all answer yes. It's not hard to come across that and to find that product. Really what it relates to, again, is at this point, as the sheriff mentioned, the state of Iowa has not passed anything legally from a recreational standpoint.
No.
We do have some controlled opportunities from a medical standpoint. Again, those that are using that understand what those credentials that they must have.
Right.
They know where
they
product
have
must
it,
be
I believe
bought.
It's a specific card. Isn't it a plastic card?
Yeah,
that
there's,
would
some,
indicate,
there's some identification that clearly makes that, you know, easy for us to look at and say, okay, this is okay, and things of that sort. But that doesn't mean that we're going to legalize using a substance and combine it with other activities like driving. You know, I don't think the state of Iowa is ever going to go to the point where we think it's okay for people to use any type of substance that could impair their driving and you know,
right,
look the other way just because they obtained it in another state.
Is there a test? Is there tests for stopping somebody with marijuana? Is it just pretty much just, is there an act? Is there, there's no, obviously you don't, can't take a, is there a breath test that you can take?
So a lot of times I know on the patrol, and I know certified DREs or drug recognition experts maybe have a different level, but I'm just talking common road trooper, road deputy, city police officer. We use standardized field sobriety testing, same things that we would use for alcohol impairment, prescription med impairments, anything of that sort. You know, good questioning, good observations, maybe making a case about the driving in and
okay,
of itself. We use those standardized tests and the alcohol breathalyzer test if it's, you know, showing all zeros, but something doesn't seem to be adding up, then maybe we bring in that drug recognition expert for some further testing, ultimately potentially a urine test or a blood test to see what's actually in that driver's system.
You know, one of the things that occurred to me is, and we haven't talked about it for a long time, but it is when to chase and when not to chase, when to break off a chase and when to not. You pull somebody over, somebody's pulled over, and or they see the flashing lights behind them, and instead of pulling over, they just simply floor it and start heading in whatever direction. They obviously have something to hide of some sort, or at least they've been spooked enough to, or there's something going on there. So how do you, in terms of making a decision, is that a decision made by the officer? Is that an officer discretion decision? Jeff Klein?
It depends on what the stop is for to begin with. The officers obviously are going to need probable cause to initiate that stop to begin with. In the event that the offender decides not to yield to the officer, then the shift commander will come into play and make a determination as to whether or not, for lack of a better term, the punishment fits the crime. Most generally, we're not going to chase someone for a seatbelt violation or a stop sign violation. However, we also need to continue and find out, are there warrants for the driver? Are we able to identify the driver? Is the vehicle stolen? Has it been used in some other more violent crime somewhere else? We're going to make a determination if the offender needs to be taken off the street because he poses a risk to the general public, or if it's something we can catch up with them later on and make a determination as to what charges may be filed.
We seem to see a lot of, you know, somebody's got a headlight or a taillight out or something like that, and they and if you got a taillight out and you don't pull on over, you know, and you start speeding away in a high speed, is there a high speed determination of what is worth, or how fast you, I mean, I guess what, it's damage, or it's threat to life and limb and threat to through to the general public. Is there any, I guess, is that something that you the officer uses his discretion on? Is that right? Or is there a company policy? Or is there a police policy on that?
There is a pursuit policy for us. And the parameters that it takes, and it has a lot to do with risk assessment. You know, the time of day, the weather, where they're at, the traffic flow, what the driver of the offending vehicle is doing, and what they're seeing. So all those are taken into account, and even what you know, not what you perceive to know, but what you know at the time of the stop. If it's just a taillight, then that's what you can go by. And there may be things inside that vehicle or that the driver's trying to hide from law enforcement or elude from that we cannot take into account. But it's like the major said, when we initially pull up that stop, we're constantly gathering information on that stop. And if we recognize the driver, that's another factor we take in to assess the risk. If there's license plates on the vehicle, you know, there's a lot of other things that we're gathering at the time that may help us to apprehend them at a later time more safely versus right immediately on that stop.
Let's go to Jason Marlowe. Jason, Iowa State Patrol, if anybody's going to be involved in a high-speed chase, I'm going to guess the State Patrol would be the first line of defense, or I guess the most likely one to be involved in a chase if somebody's trying to elude officers, aren't you?
Sure, and our pursuit policy details many of the things that were mentioned prior, and we look for maybe even the potential of what the risk and quote-unquote reward would be, the experience of that trooper. If it's a brand-new trooper, they've never been in a pursuit before versus somebody that's been on 25 years and has seen several of them. So we look at those. We will continue to try to apprehend those people. I know there are some departments across the country and maybe even within Iowa that have an absolute no chase, no pursuit policy.
What's the situation on bridge or not, heading over to Illinois or not? Obviously, you have full ability to continue any chase directly over to Illinois, do you not?
I think that would be the case for all of us here, as we know we're a border state, whether that's Illinois or you get farther in District 13 into Missouri, as well as the other places around the Iowa. And you look at, again, that the need, is it worth it? Is it a minor traffic violation, equipment violation?
How familiar you are with the roads.
Familiar with the roadways, things of that sort. But eventually, if the pursuit does continue into a bordering state, we're then going to relinquish that to the authorities of that state and allow them to take over those primary responsibilities.
We hear a lot of chases, vehicle chases that end with stop sticks, and obviously those have to be coordinated. So if you're chasing somebody, you got to have somebody up the road there that can put those out. Is there some magic, you know, I guess what, determination whether you're going to use stop sticks or not to get a vehicle to stop?
Now, the stop sticks are a great tool for us, and it's been said ever since I was a kid, you know, you can outrun the car, you're not going to outrun the radio. And our communication has to be effective when these pursuits start, and the deployment of our personnel is key in that communication. So, and when we get our personnel deployed, and then I know it's happened several times here where maybe a pursuit that's started like on Highway 61 start coming into town, you know, our obligation is to protect what's here in town as a local law enforcement. And so we set up on the outside of town if we could, and when they come by, the stop sticks have been effective in the past, and I know that's a solution, and it's about the safest solution to a resolution on stopping a pursuit.
But in terms of chasing in town, is there a different? Obviously, in chasing in town, would be different than chasing outside of town, wouldn't it?
Well, the population definitely. I mean, when other people are around, the risk just goes up a lot higher versus in a county setting. You know, there's not that much population and probably less traffic. You know, and we have a lot of intersections here, and that's dangerous for a collision in those intersections. So we have to take all that into account and weigh that. Weigh that out and make that decision, you know, at that time. And it's the officer's responsibility and our command staff, their responsibility to make those decisions and move forward.
And Jason, let's talk about the coordinating with other law enforcement agencies. I'm guessing if you're chasing somebody, you're in communication now with other agencies that are on the way where this vehicle is going.
You bet. And I think no matter what career we're talking about, whether you work here at KBUR or you're in law enforcement, technology has changed how we do things in recent years. When I first started, it was listen to the radio. You needed to know the geography basically in your own mind. There wouldn't have been time to look up things on a map. Yep. We now use systems on our computers in our cars that detail the presence and location of just about everybody that's using that mock system, which all of us here do. So you can kind of look at that. Dispatchers that are coordinating that behind the scenes can patch in radio frequencies where the officer no longer even has to reach down and change the button on their radio during those type of events, because we know that could be a distraction. So all of that stuff plays a huge role in coordinating and getting, you know, people in the correct positions to hopefully end that pursuit safely for everybody involved.
All right, let's use your myriad of experience here. Road rage. How big is road rage as a problem now? And is it a bigger problem now than it was 10 or 15 years ago?
Sheriff, you have the most experience here, not to say your age or anything.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's worse, you know, probably than it's ever been. I think people are very quick-tempered and are very quick to judge and not, you know, take a deep breath and back off. And I think we see a lot of that not only in behind the wheel, but just in everyday situations. We run into people, and I think that it is a problem. And I think that we all need to take a deep breath when we get behind the wheel, and we need to drive friendly, be a little more compassionate for others behind the wheel, and slow down. I think that's one of the biggest things. And again, distracted driving is a terrible thing and that we deal with every day. So, yeah, I think road rage is – we don't see a lot of it around here, thankfully. But, yes, yeah, you'll still see it occasionally.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I saw it on the way up to the station this morning, Steve.
Really?
And believe it or not, just right out in front. And I know the gentleman that was behind me, so I'll have a conversation later on why he was in such a hurry.
But, okay. It's not somebody in this room, is it?
No, okay. No, it was not.
Okay, that's good.
So it does happen to us also.
Wow,
and
okay.
I'm not in a marked police car.
No, I understand. Yeah, okay. Well, it's road rage and... again, we also talk about the proliferation of weapons or guns now, and particularly a lot of them illegal guns. And somebody with road rage and a gun in their hand, that's a pretty bad combination, isn't it?
Oh, I believe it would be, yeah. And it all goes to the state of mind of the driver, you know. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. And there's a lot of legal gun owners out there that are very responsible with the firearms they have and understand what that firearm's capable of doing. And to determine that, I mean, the illegal gun owners that are out there, that's what we seek out and try to prevent them from owning a firearm or having possession of it, because for some reason they've been determined not to be responsible enough to have one.
Wow. Well, we're going to take a break. We've got the peace officers with us. Well, before we do, let's go to the phones. Good morning. Who do we have with us today?
Mary.
Mary, yes, Mary. What's your question for the peace officers?
I have an argument with my son. doesn't the red light off to the side means no right turn?
The red light off to, you're talking about at an intersection, is that
right? Yeah.
Okay. Red light. Red light on in terms of no right turn. Actually, if I'm correct. Unless there is a sign marking no turn on red, it is legal to turn on red after you've come to a complete stop and viewed that it's safe to proceed. Is that right?
That's correct. I would agree.
But if there's another sign off to the right, doesn't that mean no right turn?
If it's posted, I'm thinking of the one here on Washington and Central. There's a no right turn.
Okay.
Sign there.
Right, okay. But as I said, unless there is the sign would be the mitigator.
It would have
here.
To be posted.
There'd have to be an additional sign saying
right.
no right
an
turn.
An additional sign, yes.
If there's a red light on the right of the main signs, you can turn on the red light.
Once you stop, make
you
a complete
stop.
You have to stop anyway.
Well, no, you do.
You turn right.
Right, you do stop.
And
yes.
If the extra red light on the right of the main sign.
Isn't that extra red light for people coming the other direction?
It would just the red light you're talking about, ma'am, is for just visibility, because sometimes lights are in a position that they're hard to see. So if there's a red light to your right and a red light in front of you. Even though there's a red light to the right, there still would have to be a sign posted that says no right turn on red that would allow you not to turn right on red. Yeah. Otherwise, if you come to a complete stop at that light, you're able to turn right when traffic's clear.
Yeah, so, once you yield the intersection. That's,
once you
that's
yield,
the
yes.
Point,
right?
So unless there's a posted sign anywhere, right on red is a go.
You can, but you have to stop first and yield to any traffic. Right.
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 Okay, is that clear?
No.
No. Okay.
If you have a red light, you can turn on right.
Right. Right.
But if there's an extra sign on the right.
If there's a sign, yes. If there's a just
if there's a sign that says no right turn.
A red light.
It would have no. It would not be. You'd have to. There has to be a sign saying no right turn on red. Otherwise, you can. That's the bottom line.
Well, why? Why is it an extra red light?
That's because there's what Dennis said. Because sometimes you have the light, you can't see the red light when it's straight in front of you because of the sun coming in. Mm-hmm. So you have an extra red light that just basically is
for visibility.
Just,
yes.
Visibility, yeah. You understand?
Well, I understood the extra red light on the right meant. No right turn.
Nope. That doesn't mean anything. It just means it's just an additional light to make you stop. And you do have to stop, but you can turn right as long as there is no sign that prohibits it. Okay?
I was wrong then.
You were wrong, yes.
You don't have to tell your son that.
Yeah, your son won that one. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Mary. All right, take care. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back.
I'm Michael Bruskowski, the voice of Southeastern Community College Basketball, and join me every Friday for Live with Blackhawk Nation, sponsored by Standard of Beaverdale, as we talk with the coaches, athletes, and others for an insider's view of the SEC athletics program. Hear the latest news regarding the teams at SEC. Hear Live with Blackhawk Nation every Friday at 7:22 in the morning and 5:25 in the evening on 99.3 and 1490 KBUR, and at 7:56 a.m. and 5:56 p.m. on Fox Sports 104.5 and 1360.
Richard Broadcasting is a locally owned media and entertainment company specializing in live events, radio, digital, and social media. We provide information and entertainment to the local community and trusted marketing solutions to area businesses. Richard Broadcasting currently has a space available
available for an account representative, and we're looking for a community-oriented individual to join our sales team. As an account representative for Pritchard Broadcasting, you will identify and develop new business opportunities to sell radio, digital, and special events to prospective clients. Your goal will be to grow client relationships you create and help our customers achieve their marketing objectives. You will have the opportunity to use your experience to make our customers successful. To be seriously considered for this position, you must be an enthusiastic and hardworking person who thrives in a fast-paced, high-growth, rapidly changing culture and environment. Interested? Send your cover letter and resume to Pritchard Broadcasting, 610 North 4th Street, Suite 300, Burlington, Iowa, 52601. Or email marketing@burlingtonradio.com. No calls, please. Pritchard Broadcasting is an equal opportunity employer.
Try Eucrisa for mild to moderate eczema. It works at and below the skin surface and can be used on almost everybody, like on the dimples of a diva.
Yeah, yeah, roll your boat. Yeah, roll your boat.
Or the shoulders of a chef.
Look, Mom, I made jelly beans on toast.
Steroid-free Eucrisa works at and below the skin surface. It blocks PDE4 enzymes, which is believed to reduce inflammation, even on the wrist of a rebel.
What did you do to your hair?
What?
The specific way Eucrisa works is not well-defined. Prescription Eucrisa for mild to moderate eczema is for topical use only in ages 2 and up. Do not use if you are allergic to Eucrisa, Crisaboral Ointment 2%, or its ingredients. Allergic reactions, including hives, itching, swelling, and redness, may occur at or near the application site. The most common side effect is application site pain, such as burning or stinging.
Come on, moms and dads. Check out Eucrisa.com and ask your doctor about Eucrisa.
Can I sing one more song?
Nutrient Ag Solutions presents Burlington Snowball, March 12th, 13th, and 14th at Burlington's Memorial Auditorium. Get your tickets now at our local outlets. Keeks Buying Community Credit Union in Burlington and Fort Madison. The Port of Burlington Welcome Center. The Memorial Auditorium Box Office. Pep Stop in Mount Pleasant. Jet Stop BP in Denmark. And Men's Firestone in Carthage. Snowball 2020, presented by Nutrient Ag Solutions and brought to you by Big Country 103.1, the Pizzazz Entertainment Complex, and Golden Eagle Bud Light.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
News brought to you by Kelly O'Shea's Pub and Grill, featuring a full menu including seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, and appetizers, as well as nightly specials. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
And now a look at today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. Burlington Mayor John Billups says it's tough for him to reconcile what Major League Baseball is considering with its minor league system. The Burlington Beacon reports that the Quad City River Bandits, Clinton Lumber Kings, and Burlington Bees have uncertain futures as the MLB considers reducing its number of affiliated teams. Billups is one of 145 mayors throughout the country who have signed a mayor's task force petition to protest the possible minor league closures. In the MLB proposal revealed last fall, are plans for 42 minor league teams to lose their MLB parent club affiliation. Three of Iowa's five minor league teams were on that initial cut list. The Warren County Sheriff says that just after midnight on Wednesday, Monmouth Police and Warren County deputies responded to a burglar alarm at Farm King. 23-year-old George C. Wallace of Monmouth was arrested at the scene after a foot chase. A crime scene investigator with the Illinois State Police also responded to the scene after the arrest. Wallace was alleged to have taken a vehicle in Monmouth, then broke into the store where firearms were taken after breaking a display case. Wallace was taken to Warren County Jail and charged with burglary, theft over $500, possession of a firearm with no FOID card, unlawful use of a weapon by a felon, and burglary from a vehicle. The missing guns were all recovered. An Atomo man is in jail for an incident that took place 8 years ago. Tresdeen Mayberry is charged with third-degree sexual abuse after he allegedly had, quote, forcible sexual contact with a 14-year-old girl when he was 21. Although the crime occurred 8 years ago, when a victim of sexual abuse is a minor, charge can be filed within 10 years of the victim turning 18. Mayberry appeared in court Tuesday and waived his option for a preliminary hearing. He's being held at Wapello County Jail on a $10,000 bond. A house in Keokuk has been determined a total loss following an overnight fire. Jackson Township Fire Department Chief Carl Morgan said that the fire was at a home located at 2324 340th Street and started just before 10 p.m. Tuesday night. Morgan says it happened at a modular construction home in the back half of the house. Crews battled the fire for about 4 hours but were called back due to the fire rekindling. Everyone was able to get out of the house and no one was injured. The fire is currently under investigation. And those are today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Lillian Wu. On the Senate floor a short
while ago,
a Senate
leader appearing to threaten or incite violence on the stuff of the Supreme Court could literally be a matter of deadly seriousness.
Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blasting Senator Chuck Schumer for controversial remarks outside the Supreme Court.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, You have released the whirlwind, and you will pay the price.
A spokesman for Senator Schumer says that the senator was simply referring to paying a political price.
Fox's Kristen Fisher. A cruise ship quarantined off the coast of California after a previous passenger becomes the first U.S. death outside of Washington state. The 71-year-old had underlying health conditions. And former UAW President Gary Jones charged with corruption, accused of conspiring with others at the union to embezzle more than $1 million. America's listening to Fox News.
Come enjoy the warmth and hospitality of an authentic Irish pub right here in Burlington. Kelly O'Shea's restaurant features seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, appetizers, and delicious nightly specials. The bar offers specialty beers on tap, extra cold bottles and cans, and a variety of liquors and coolers. At Kelly O'Shea's, they enjoy what they do, and they're sure you will too. So come on down, meet some friendly people who love to socialize, and enjoy a warm meal and cold drink at Kelly O'Shea's Pub and Grill on Main Street in Burlington.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
A mostly sunny, breezy day today. A high of 53 degrees with winds southwest 15 to 20, becoming west 20 to 25, gusting to 40 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy tonight, becoming clear, low down to 30, with winds gusting to 35 miles an hour from the northwest. We've got a wind advisory till 6 p.m. tonight. Sunny on Friday, 46. Clear Friday night, low to 31. Sunny Saturday, 60. Sunny Sunday, 66. Right now, we've got skies that are partly sunny. It's 47.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. Here we go again. A roller coaster on Wall Street right out of the gate. Stocks are falling after yesterday's rally on coronavirus worries. Investors are worried an economic slowdown is looming as people stay home because they don't want to get sick. The Dow is down 2.5%, down 679 points. The NASDAQ down 2% now, down 178 points. And the S&P 500 index is down almost 2.5%. Down 73 points. Companies are reacting to the coronavirus spread. Amazon has asked Seattle employees to work from home for the rest of the month. Microsoft has told its Seattle and San Francisco employees to work from home if possible. And the airlines are taking a hit. Southwest says it'll see a first quarter revenue hit from the outbreak. United Airlines and JetBlue cutting flights. Jessica Ettinger, CNBC.
Here is some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, and it's worked beautifully for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry, and over the years, members have shared over $3 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. You're not stuck with a high-cost health plan. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more, and there's no pressure. They are super easy to talk to. Call 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE. 844-91-BIBLE.
Start your day with KBUR.
The morning news.
The weather.
Information you need to start your day.
Instant, up to date.
News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. And online at KBUR.com.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
And welcome back on the talk show, Peace Officer Talk Show today. Jason Marlowe of the Iowa State Patrol. We've got Major Jeff Klein of the Burlington Police Department, the Sheriff of Des Moines County, Mike Johnstone, the Chief of the Burlington Police Department, Dennis Kramer, all joining us as well today. One of the things that I do know is confusing to some people. We had Mary called up talking about can you turn right on a red light at an intersection, and unless there's a sign prohibiting it, one of the things that I've seen people that have, you know, there's so many left, so many green arrows that go to the left in terms of intersections. I know one of them is at, for instance, the intersection of Mount Pleasant and, well, the same intersection, the intersection of Mount Pleasant and Roosevelt. If you're in that in your left turn lane, there may not be a left turn arrow to tell you that you can go, and you have to basically obviously yield to the traffic that is coming to you. And I've seen people that have jumped at it and start to turn and realize, oh wait a minute, I can't. I guess that confusion. I don't know how. There's a number of intersections very similar to that, isn't there, gentlemen? And I guess just basically it's basically be sure to realize that a green light doesn't mean you can can turn.
You see that a lot where folks will they'll have the protected turn with the arrow, and then it'll go to regular green, and understand you are not protected at that point. When you turn in, you have to yield to oncoming traffic. And if you do not, you will be at fault at that accident site. So be sure, and any time you're progressing to an intersection, make sure that you be careful with the surrounding traffic and understand that you could be in an accident if you don't yield properly.
One of the things I was talking about with Dennis earlier is that the number of deer in the city is astronomical, or at least it seems. I mean, my neighborhood is... I remember times I've been on my way to work and I've gone the other way, go around my the cul-de-sac that I'm on, and I'll count 20 to 25 deer just in that one area, that one block area. And I don't know, you said that there's going to be a thinning of the herd, so to speak, coming up. Is that right?
Well, there had been another citizen that had brought it forward to the council and doing some research on it. And I started this last fall and doing some research and getting with the Iowa DNR. They have a depredation biologist that usually manages what they call deer management zones in the urban areas. And in looking across the state, there's quite a few of those management zones that are out there that people hunt inside city limits for deer to cut down on the deer population for a variety of reasons. Some of them are the car vehicle or deer vehicle accidents that happen. The other thing is that they do forage a lot of people's plants that they plant and cause some damage that way. In our city parks, they're causing damage, I know, to some of the plants that they have out there and trees. So there's reasons for, I guess, thinning the population of deer in town. During hunting season, the biologist also notices during regular hunting season, like where hunting is allowed out in the county, the deer tend to move in town. They've become accustomed to that or get pressure and get pushed into town. So this year, we're going to try and do a deer management zone through the DNR, and there'll be some rules and things that apply to that.
I notice, of course, I come to work early in the morning, and the number of, I guess, various beasts, obviously I don't see bear, but I see a lot of raccoons in the city, a lot of deer, let's see, I'm not sure what other sorts of rodents and deer, things like that. But, they seem to be living in the sewers, basically. Is that...
Those raccoons and possums and stuff like that forage in trash, usually. Right. And, people keeping their trash cans secured and not letting it lay around in their yard and leaving bags just out there because that's not secure. But securing those, keeping them from going to that food source, that's what they're doing, is looking for food source.
Okay, all right.
And that's why you see that those animals... And like I said, they scavenge.
There's a lot of things scurrying in front of me as I'm going to work in the morning anyway. We talk about the thinning of that, but we also talk a little bit about, I think, any changes in Iowa laws being proposed. I'm not sure if there is. Is there any cell phone changes? Are they looking at basically, is there a proposal to do, eliminate the utilization or, I guess, holding cell phones? I know they do not have that. Is not legal in Illinois. Is there such a law? There's no law in Iowa yet. Is there a proposal
not
to make
quite
a law?
Yet? Depending on your age, for our younger drivers, there would be a restriction even on talking on their phone. But if you know anything about teenagers, I have three of them at my house.
They don't talk on the phone.
They never call anyone. Yeah,
but
they never dial it the old-fashioned way.
But they do. They do the worst thing. And that is the next thing. Yeah. That is texting. And texting while driving. How big of a problem is that?
I think it's an issue. I think it's probably an underreported issue in Iowa statistically. When you look at the causation of crashes, mainly because we still ask people if they were on their phone after involved in an accident or a car crash. And we clearly know that the answer is probably no, I would never do that, and we're not maybe always getting an honest representation of what occurred. Now, some would say, well, then why don't you just grab their phone and rifle through their text messages to see if they were using it prior to the crash? Well, there's a little thing called the Fourth Amendment that protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures, right. So you can't always just go to that source to confirm that. So we still ask people. I do believe there are two things currently active in the Iowa legislative session, one on the House, one on the Senate side, that's going to potentially address distracted driving and potentially even make Iowa a hands-free state similar to Illinois.
I had a question somebody was asking about. We were talking about driverless trucks, and it appears to be there's a great deal of research, a great deal of efforts being made for fleets to basically become driverless semis. Who would be, in an accident with a driverless truck, would they be the liability issue? Or
yeah, I think agent? At this point, last year the session addressed some autonomous vehicles and kind of the future of driving, and from a lawful standpoint, we would not authorize the vehicle completely being unmanned at this point. Somebody's got to be in that traditional driver's seat, even if it's in an autonomous mode. Going forward into the future, who knows what we could see? You know, I don't know if I'll live long enough. I don't think we're quite to the George Jetson spaceship era of flying things around Burlington, Iowa yet. But someday you may potentially see motor vehicles that don't even possess a steering wheel. It's completely autonomous. We're not there yet. But again, we look at some of the things that have been addressed, requiring people to be in that traditional operator's seat. If it's in that autonomous mode, then you would potentially look at the owner of the vehicle as the one being responsible to make sure that it's being driven legally. And as time continues to move forward, you're going to see a lot more changes in that particular motor vehicle style.
That'll be a significant change in terms of, in fact, I'm guessing, are all of you in the, becoming more up to speed on what things are going to be happening in the future? I don't know if those are conferences topics or whatever, but Mike, I don't know, do you get many things at all, people talking about that?
Oh yeah, I think it's Jason said, it's the future. And sorry, I think there's a lot of bugs need to be worked out of that whole deal, though.
I think there certainly are some concerns, and I would throw this out. You know, if you look at the next generation of drivers and their non-excitement level about driving, it's way different than all of us probably in this room. You know, they want to go places, but they're not really excited about driving themselves. The Route 66 days of crossing the United States on that, you know, legendary highway probably aren't going to be as popular as they once were.
Now, I will say that it does appear to be a difference between males and females. We have in our neighborhood, within just a few houses of me, there are three teenage drivers who are under 16. They have school permits to drive vehicles, and their family has bought them their own cars. I just wondered, what does a school permit, it seems that they're out on those cars all the time. That's the question. What does a school permit allow you to do or not do?
So originally school permits were designed to allow students to drive to and from school. Makes sense, right? That's
right.
What the name of it is.
It certainly does make sense.
What we've now gone to is many, if not all, of the extracurricular activities that involve the school. So therefore, you may see them driving even more.
Okay.
For instance, if they participate in, let's say, sports, they could have early morning practices before school actually starts. They could have certainly practices after school. If they're in the band, same thing, science club, FFA. Anything that's affiliated with the school that they attend could potentially allow them to drive on a school permit to and from those events.
And I suppose that it'd be pretty hard to determine what route they would have to be taking, right?
There's certainly some questions. You know, again, that's going to be addressed by the officers on the side of the road. If they encounter a young adult that's on a school permit, you know, you're going to ask a lot of questions. You're going to confirm some of the things, and that's supposed to be that most direct an accessible route from their residence to the school that they attend.
Right. We're going
to
take a quick break. We'll be back with more of the peace officers right after this.
The
third-seeded Iowa Hawkeye women open up Big Ten tournament play Friday night on KBUR. Join Rob Brooks for all the action. Brought to you by Case Bank Community Credit Union, the Boogaloo at Fun City at Pizzazz, Barn Grover Glass, and by Courtesy Door. It's Iowa Hawkeye women's quarterfinal Big Ten tournament action Friday night at 7:30 on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and KBUR.com.
This is Lisa Stofan. Heard the Mark Patrick weight loss hypnosis hype? Well, I attended because my father stopped smoking. I lost 70 pounds and my friend lost 20 pounds in the first 2 months.
Oh my goodness, what are you waiting for? Join Mark Patrick seminars and lose the weight or stop smoking guaranteed for only $49.99. That's right, Weight Loss Seminar, Friday, March 20th at the Howard Johnson in Burlington. Time is 5:30 to 7:30. Registration begins at 5 p.m. Stop Smoking Seminar starts at 8 p.m., registration starting at 7:30.
Of the two certainties in life, let's focus on taxes for a moment. Our family-owned tax business has succeeded by giving families just like yours the best refunds plus the lowest filing fees. Families have been trusting us not for 2 or 3 years, but 2 or 3 generations. Henry Tax and Accounting charges you by the forms required, which means you only pay for what you need, unlike the national preparers. Get the best refund. Henry Tax and Accounting in fabulous Carmen, Illinois. Find us on Facebook. We'll fill your pockets, not stretch them.
And we've got a caller waiting on line one, and I believe Bree's. Good morning. What's on your mind today?
How's Mr. Johnstone today?
Good. We're good.
Hey, I just need you to know that I got a couple people working on inmate projections because the supervisors are going to need a better time frame than someday. Okay.
Okay.
And I'm hearing from more people than you about not liking the money that's going to Lee County, so. I wanted to explain there's a regional management of jail capacity thing going on, okay? And that's, you know, basically it. And if Des Moines County expands their jail too early, then both counties are going to be sitting there with overhead they can't pay for. Or do you have a better time frame than someday yet?
No, I think that's the same answer you're going to get from the Board of Supervisors, too, Kent, because I'll tell you, the reality of it is, and we can talk about the numbers, is that what we're paying per day is a bargain in Lee County. And so you have to project that. You project that over 3 or 4 years or 10 years, and you realize that you can certainly rent space in adjoining counties a lot cheaper than you can build a jail. So that's the big question is do you spend $8 or $10 million on an addition to the jail and include plus you know what it's going to cost to run
that
jail.
What happened to the $6 million you had?
Well, as time goes on, you know that all goes up, and maybe you could do it for six. I don't know. It's not going to be my issue.
Well,
because
look,
I'm moving
the
on.
The bottom line is the supervisors in both Lee and Des Moines County. Are going to need a few years to gear up for the thing where they can do it without a referendum and a minor tax increase.
Right.
Okay?
Sure.
So I just wanted you to know that I've got a couple people working on it, and I'll get it to the board as soon as I can.
Okay. It'd be interesting
to
see it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in today. And we're about out of time today. We've got to want to thank all of our peace officers for joining us again. The Midwest Magic will be facing the Burlington Police Department on Sunday, the 22nd of March, 4 p.m., Johansson Fieldhouse. And, Dennis, this is always a fun event. It's a fun event, and it's one of the biggest. I know it's the biggest fundraiser for Midwest Magic and for Special Olympics, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a great event for us. We get an opportunity to get out and interact with those folks and play a little basketball and have some competition. And they really strive to beat us every year, and we've kind of been on a slump, but I think we're going to come back this year.
You think you'll come back this year?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah,
All right. Well, we'll see, and then we'll know, okay?
All right.
Thanks, gentlemen, for being with us. Jason Marlowe, Major Jeff Klein, Sheriff Mike Johnstone, Chief Dennis Kramer. Gentlemen, have a great day. Thank you for serving
Thanks,
very
Steve.
Much.
Steve.